Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
My professional background is in journalism, which has been a complicated and challenging field as the media landscape has evolved over the last 20 years. But the skills that I learned as a journalist, I think, have really served me in parenting and motherhood. I remember when I was pregnant for the first time, having my first child, using these obsessive online research skills just to Google anything and everything. I just felt like all the skills and research and motivation to find information out that I had as a journalist, I was able to take that skill and apply that to my quest to understand all things pregnancy and parenthood. I've noticed that as I have progressed in mom life, I've been a mother for 12 years, I am less hungry for information. I'm sure it's because some of the basic stuff I've learned over that dozen years, but also I've been able to use other skills as a journalist in parenting. Skills like asking great questions, asking questions of myself. Why did I react that way? Or is this decision right for me right now? And asking questions to my kids, like, how do I get them to reflect on their role and their dreams and their responsibilities? In a lot of cases, it is asking great questions and also finding the right timing to ask that right question, which I think is a really important skill that great journalists have. Today's guest is a journalist, author, researcher, who's bringing all of her collective wisdom to this new generation of parents. Hey, Mama, welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy. I am a co-founder here at Motherly, and I'm also a mom of five myself. Today's guest is Sharon Maisel. Sharon is an author, journalist, parenting and pregnancy expert, and a coach. Sharon's also the mom of four daughters, and she's also a grandmother. Her book, Bite-Sized Parenting, provides easily digestible guidance to support parents through the intensity of that first year of your baby's life. In today's conversation, Sharon and I talk about the overwhelming amount of parenting information out there today and how parents can navigate all of that to make informed decisions that are the best choice for their family. We also talked about the pressures of social media and unrealistic expectations, and maybe most importantly, the power of learning how to trust yourself and your instincts when it comes to your family's needs. Sharon Maisel, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting with you today.
So you are a grandma of two. You have four girls yourself. Did you know what to expect when you first became a mom yourself?
So I didn't necessarily know because I was a very young mom and I was a journalist by career and trade. And I was doing a lot of writing. And as a journalist, you know, we become experts in whatever topic we happen to be delving in at the time. And when my first daughter was born, I left the world of television. I was doing nightly news, and it was really difficult to be in the world of television news at night, not coming home till 11 p.m., sometimes later, and have a newborn. So when I left TV, I started writing about parenting a lot because I was living it. And then I very quickly had a second child, and then eventually a third and a fourth. And so through my journalism background, collecting the data, going through the recommendations, reading through the journals, speaking to doctors and professionals, nutritionists, physical therapists, nurses, researchers, I became an expert in this field. And my mission in the 25 plus years that I've been doing this as an expert, as an author, as a researcher, is really to take all that information and distill it in a way that makes it easy and digestible for new moms and dads to understand, because there's so much information out there and it gets very overwhelming and confusing. And I'm so excited to be able, with my new book, Bite Size Parenting, to be able to reach parents today, modern parents, in the way that they need to absorb the information, because, or that they want to absorb the information. Our attention spans are short these days, and we really need to find, as parents, ways to get the information while also feeling confident that we can trust what we're reading, feel confident that we understand it, and then go forward and parent.
So cool. So you and I are both journalists by trade, and over the course of our motherhood and our professional lives, kind of delved really deep into the parenting journalism world. But I'm wondering if we could linger a little bit on the skill set of a journalist, because hearing you talk about it as a new mom, as a young mom, it kind of strikes me like some of the skills and practices of a journalist might be particularly interesting to parenting and new motherhood, right? You know, getting the background, preparing, doing the interview, finding out what it is that you didn't know, having that aha moment, that whole journey. What is it about journalism and inquiry itself that you think might be relevant to parents who are listening?
I love that question, and no one's ever asked me that before. I guess it takes a fellow journalist to ask a journalist that question. And I love it, and I love the word that you use, inquiry. My kids make fun of me because I'm always asking questions. And as a journalist, that's what we do. We ask questions. I really, really believe that knowledge is power. And so the more questions that I ask, the more information I get. The more information I glean, the more I can pull together from different sources. And that process of inquiry allows me, and by extension, parents, to be able to consolidate the information, figure out what makes sense for us, right? For each of us individually as parents, and then implement that, right? Editing, exactly. And then implement that in our own families. And, you know, it, as I said before, it's very overwhelming for parents because there's so much information out there. And one of the skill sets that we as journalists have and that parents I encourage to have is exactly to do that, to edit down, to really narrow what you're taking in. Because we could spend as journalists all day researching one particular topic, because there's going to be 1,000 different sources that we can look at. But some of those sources are going to be trustworthy and accurate primary sources, and some of them are going to be questionable. And as parents, that's another skill set that we need to have, to be able to say, okay, I see a lot of stuff on social media about this particular parenting topic, but it's very conflicting. So now I'm confused and I don't know. What should I listen to? What should I do? How should I deal with it in my own family, with my own child? But when we as parents can say, okay, here's a trustworthy source. This is a medical organization. This is an author or a writer or a social media expert or a journalist who I know has done the research based on their experience and their background and their skill set. I can trust them. I can trust my doctor. I can trust my mother-in-law or not trust my mother-in-law. There's a lot of different ways that we can pick the right sources for us, the trustworthy sources for us, and then we could ignore the rest. We can tune the rest out so that we are not overwhelmed, and then we can get that story for our own child right. So I actually love taking the skills that we as journalists have and applying it to parenting, because we do that every day, even if we don't realize it as moms and dads. We are taking lots of information in, editing it, and then implementing it in a way that works for our families.
Let's talk about that part about what works for our families, because there's like this duality, and you talk about it in your book and in your work, which is, yes, I need the information, but you don't know my particular family, our particular values, the unique needs of my kid or our circumstances. I became a new mom again this past year, and some of the choices that I've made for my fifth baby are quite different, and I am so different since I had my first baby. So what is the role of intuition and personalization and knowing what's right for you in the midst of so much noise and information for parents?
You know, every person is different, and every mom or dad goes on a journey of parenthood. So the person that you are when you're a first-time parent is going to be different to the person that you are, as you just mentioned, when you're a fifth-time parent or even a second-time parent. And every baby is different. Every child is different. I remember when my first was born, and I was new in this world of parenting, both professionally and personally, right? And she was the quote-unquote perfect baby. She slept through the night really early. She rarely cried. She fed wonderfully by the book. And I'm thinking, wow, I am so good at this. No wonder I'm an expert in this. And then baby number two came, and I love her dearly, but she was the exact opposite. She barely slept through the night. She was crying all the time. I couldn't figure it out. And all of a sudden, I realized it's not so much about me as it is about these individual babies, these individual children. And they've grown up to be incredibly successful, wonderful adults. But what it helped me understand is that every child is different and every situation is different. And so in my work, what I really want to encourage parents to understand is that aside from medical and health considerations, things like make sure that you're getting baby care, well, child care regularly, make sure that your baby is sleeping on his or her back at night with no bumpers or blankets or pillows in the crib. Those are things that are very black and white. But besides those things, most of the decisions that we make as parents don't really matter in the long run. It doesn't really matter if we choose to swaddle our baby or not. It doesn't really matter if we choose to use a pacifier or which type of pacifier to use. It doesn't really matter which type of formula we use or whether we choose to only breastfeed or only use formula or combo feed. There are so many choices that become very polarizing that don't really matter in the long run. But what does matter is that moms and dads feel good about the choices that they're making, because that is what will make you into the best parent for your child. We as parents know what will work for us. We as parents know what will work for our baby. We as parents know what will work for our family and our situation in a particular moment in time. We may not always realize it. We may not have confidence in that. But if we can take a step back and say, I'm hearing a lot of noise out there. I'm hearing that I have to do it this way, or I have to get that product. But if I remember that for most of the things in parenting, I get to choose and it's okay this way or that way, then that gives us the freedom to relax, the freedom to be a little less stressed, and the freedom to enjoy parenting a little more, because we don't get so caught up in the, oh, if I don't do it this way, something's going to happen to my child.
Certainly new motherhood feels so urgent and overwhelming and scary. You were a young mom. You're now a grandmother of two. How does the perspective of time influence and shape just things like you just said, like all this stuff doesn't really matter. You could do all these things and the outcomes are going to be just fine. But I guess I'm wondering if you could reflect on perspective and time and how it reshapes some of these what feel like overwhelming decisions as a mom.
What I try to say with the perspective that I have and the experience that I have is the most important thing I can give you for the first year is to take a deep breath and then take a step back. It's very hard to do that when we're in the moment, right? We have a crying baby. We fed the baby and changed the baby and burped the baby and the baby's still crying and we don't know why. It's really hard. We are exhausted because we haven't slept in 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. We don't have the capacity always to take that deep breath. But if we could find it maybe once a day, once a month, once a week, and find that time to say, okay, if I take a physical step back, put her safely in the crib, and just ground myself, we are helping ourselves to get that perspective, to understand that it doesn't matter in the long haul, right? That my baby cried for an extra 3 minutes before I was able to figure out what to help and how to help. or that I didn't even figure out how to help and she got really tired from the crying, right? That's the reality of parenting and parenthood. And if we can give ourselves some grace and allow ourselves to fail, to not have all the answers, to not figure it all out. Again, we're talking about the non-health or medical stuff, their safety stuff. The other things don't matter. Your baby will be fine. And it's hard to find that perspective when you're mired in it. But I hope through my work to be able to give parents that ability to take things with a little less weight, even though it's very weighty, and with a little more ease. I had children a while ago, and now I'm seeing my children parent their grandchildren, babies, young babies right now. And there is a big difference with parenting today than it was 20, 25 years ago. There's so much more difficulty in a way for parents today, I feel and I fear. Social media, which I didn't have when I was a new mom, is really, I think, exacerbating that sense of overwhelm. We're looking at a very unrealistic view of parenting in certain cases. And I love when moms are showing and dads are showing what real life looks like with babies and toddlers and teens even. But a lot of the time, what's being shown is an unrealistic view of what parenthood looks like, which makes parents feel bad, right? What am I doing wrong? Why did her body bounce back so quickly after birth? Why is he able to get his baby to sleep through the night and I can't? What's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? So social media is great, but we also have to recognize how today's parents and today's generation have to struggle with the unrealistic expectations that social media gives and the stress that it induces. And the second thing that I notice is this culture of comparison. Parents are always being forced to compare their children to other children. In the olden days, you would just see other kids in your family or in the playground or things like that. Now we are seeing, because of social media, babies every single day, toddlers every single day, potty training, preschoolers every single day on social media. So we're really able, for better or mostly for worse, to say, wow, this kid is talking and mine is the same age and not making any real effort to talking. Oh my gosh, what's wrong with my child? This 2-year-old is already fully potty trained and my 3.5-year-old is still struggling with diapers. This really, again, exacerbates those sense of stress and overwhelm. And that's something that I see as a real struggle. And the last thing is that we have so much more information. Again, there's two edges to the sword, right? It's good and it's bad. When we have a question as parents, we can Google it and get an immediate answer, but we get 40 answers. And so it's hard to parse out which is the right answer or the trustworthy answer or the accurate answer. We have so much information being thrown at us through social media, online, blogs, through experts, and that becomes very overwhelming too. And so what I've really set out to do in all my work, whether it's my parenting coaching or my social media or my new book, Bite-Sized Parenting, is really present the information in a way that's more digestible and to really speak to parents today where they are.
This book focuses on baby's first year and takes this bite-sized parenting approach, which you have a super popular Instagram account, very visual, thousands of resources that you've created for parents in your community to read, digest, apply in their own lives. When I think about that first year of baby's life, it's like an obstacle course of milestones and things that happen to a family, to the parents and to the baby. What is it about the first year of a new baby's life that is so meaningful? And how does the book that you've created help empower parents through that really intense year?
So the word intense is really the optimal word here. It's really, really hard to parent that first year. Not to say that there are other stages that aren't equally difficult, but in terms of the overarching, overwhelming investment that we have to put into a really helpless baby in that first year, that's really takes a lot out of us. So I really set out to take the most essential information that parents in the first year need and break it down into three groups of the essentials that parents are thinking about, worrying about, talking about in the first year. And those big three are sleeping, feeding, and pooping or diaper contents. And it's really those topics that consume most of our minds in that first year. Is my baby eating enough? Should I be worried? What are the diaper contents? And then, of course, sleeping. When will my baby sleep through the night? How many naps should my baby have? So those are the big three. And then the secondary two are the topics that we think about when we're not mired in those first three. And those are things like playing and learning or milestones, ways to stimulate our baby. How can we help our baby roll over or crawl or sit or walk? Those are the secondary two. And the relegated one is something that we don't usually see in parenting books. And I really wanted to make sure that I focused on that as well. And that is you or us, the parents. The relegated one, relegated because when we think about parenting, we are giving ourselves to our baby so much. And so the focus becomes the baby. The focus becomes this child, as it should. But there are also things that we as parents are going through, struggles that we are having, challenges that we are facing. Every chapter has a section for parents that really helps give them that time to breathe and to acknowledge some of the challenges that we as parents go through. Topics that we as parents face, but we don't necessarily take the time to think about.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You've been in this space, this parenting space for 25 years. And I've been a mom for 11 years. So I haven't had the full perspective that you do. And a big thing we talk all the time about at Motherly is how do we serve and support moms? And really witnessing a new generation of mothers who don't want to be secondary to the experience of parenting, that we want to feel well and whole through motherhood. So in your view, is there something different about this new generation of mothers that is becoming moms for the first time? And what does it take for that generation to navigate through that first year of new motherhood in a way that feels good, not just isolating and disorienting?
I think that a great way to answer that would be to give permission to new moms to lose the guilt. We have a lot of guilt. It's natural, right? It's innate as moms. And I think that we really want to be the perfect parent. And the truth is that there is no such thing as a perfect parent. We will not be perfect parents. We will be great parents. We will be perfect parents for our children, but we will not meet the expectations that society has sometimes set out for us. And so that causes us sometimes to feel guilty. In order to give moms, to help them come back to the reality of what that first year feels like, I really want to give permission to everybody to say, I'm not going to feel guilty about this. I'm not going to feel guilty that I had a really bad day today. I'm not going to feel guilty that I couldn't exclusively breastfeed. I'm not going to feel guilty because I'm doing what I can to get through the day, to get through the week, to get through the month, and to get through this very exhausting, scary, and transformational year. And I'm going to celebrate the wins.
When you look back on your own motherhood journey and how it has transformed you, how would you describe what you have gone through and the person you were before and the person you are now?
No one's ever asked me that question. And I love it because I am a different person and I haven't really even thought about it. But I guess, you know, you're a mom of five. I'm a mom of four. That's 9 kids between us. We have a lot of kids. And I think that if someone had told me before I started having that you will have enough love in you for 4 kids, or if someone said that to you for 5 kids, I'm not sure I would believe them because how is that possible? And I don't even know that I would be able to say that even after I had my first because I loved my first so much. And how could I possibly have space for more? And I did, and I do. And watching children grow from babyhood to adulthood is probably the most rewarding part of giving all that love, because you can see all the hard work that you've put in as a parent and you see the results. It's incredible to see your children branch out, to go out into the world, right? We are really giving our children the skills, teaching them the skills to leave the nest, to fly away, to be independent. And when they become independent, right, when we see them take those steps, the reward is just huge, because you see all that hard work, all those sleepless nights, and all the things that we've gone through with our kids as parents, they're all worth it, because then you start to see, yeah, I did my job. My kids are now on their own. And when they become parents and we see the cycle continuing, there's such a huge reward in that.
I'm seeing it a little bit now. My oldest is 11, and I brought him to a football game at the local high school recently, and I left him there. And I thought, I trust him, and I'm happy for him. You know, his buds are there. This is his thing. And like, the big scary world is out there, but I think he can navigate 2 hours by himself. I don't know, that felt like it lifted me in a way that is really helping me with the harder parts of motherhood right now. Just the joy of my son getting the freedom to go start in a small way for 2 hours on a Friday night, live his life. It's not full circle of life moment, but it feels like the beginning of motherhood, just holding them so close and being so needed. And then now as he enters like the teen years, I'm getting pushed away a little bit, and it's okay. And I feel sad and excited for both of us.
That's the perspective. That's the perspective, that being pushed away. But I love it, because you're living it. You're living it right now. And you're going to, as you said, this is the beginning of it. The truth is that pushing away starts in toddlerhood. When your toddler starts to say, me do it, you know, it pushes you away because they want to do it themselves. That's the beginning of independence. And obviously a toddler is far, far from independence. And an 11-year-old, as you just described, is getting there, right? 2 hours with his friends, he's getting there. Obviously, you're not going to give him the car keys and say, okay, you're on your own now. But that's going to come pretty quickly. And so these first steps of pushing away, as hard as it may feel, is also really positive, because that's what we're doing. We are raising kids so that they can become independent adults. And so when you start to see the beginnings of it, it is uplifting. And it's a wonderful feeling.
It is a wonderful feeling. And you said the word independent, and I so feel that. And a lot of what I've been thinking about in motherhood lately, and culturally and socially, is what healthy interdependence looks like. I'm just wondering if you could talk about what it's like to have 4 grown daughters and grandchildren, and what that healthy interdependence looks like as a grown-up family that relates and cares to each other. Because I think a lot of us are realizing that American culture, especially with parenting, it does emphasize independence and like leaving the nest, but there's a healthy long view of interconnectedness and our dependence and care for one another. I'm just curious your perspective, especially as a grandma, on what that looks like for your family as people grow.
Well, you know, when the pandemic hit, my kids all came home. And so I had my children, my sons-in-law's boyfriend, we had everybody in the house. And it was scary at first, but wonderful, because we don't usually get that opportunity here in the States to have adult children living with us, right? Because that's what we do, right? We push them out of the nest, and as soon as they're off to college, that's kind of it. And so we weren't yet empty nesters, because our youngest was still in high school at the time. But all of a sudden, what we thought we were about to hit empty nesthood became a very, very full nest. And so to see adult children, and everybody had to set up their own workspace, whether they were in school or at their jobs remote, it was such an amazing and unique experience that I hope that we won't have to ever replicate, just because we, you know, one pandemic a lifetime is enough. But to be able to see how independent they are, and yet how much togetherness we can still have and enjoy, both as siblings and as parents and children. And it was really, I think, eye-opening for me. It gave me an opportunity to look at my children in a different lens, because here I was witnessing them, all the fruition of what they had become, and I was seeing it in real time, as opposed to over the telephone. So that interdependence and independence, it's all about finding that balance between the two. And finding that balance will take time and trial and error, and you will settle into something that feels right for you and your family.
What's it like watching your daughters to become mothers themselves?
I love it. They will call me up a lot and ask me questions, and I'm like, it's in my book. just read my book. Go onto my Instagram. I have all the answers there. But I do love it. I love watching them parent. As a grandparent, it's wonderful to see the next generation of parents parent and to be okay with the fact that some of the choices that they're going to make are going to be different than the choices I've made. And that's perfectly wonderful and acceptable. Knowing that the recommendations today are very different than the recommendations that we were following 25 years ago when we were first parents. And I also speak a lot to grandparents and helping them understand their role as parents of parents, which is to take that step back, to also learn and give permission to parents to acknowledge the help that they're getting or the advice that they're getting from grandparents, but then also to say, you know what? You've had your time as a parent, and this is my time.
Our mission at Motherly is certainly to support women through the journey of motherhood. And I noted in the book that you talk so much about parents, right? Moms and dads. And to be very clear, although our mission is to support mothers, it is urgent that involved fathers are also a part of what it takes for mothers to be well. How do you see today's dads being involved in the first year of baby's life, in sort of day-to-day parenting in a new way? And any advice for couples who are navigating this generational change where dads want to be more involved, they want to be equal partners, but we still live in a culture and a system that doesn't always make that possible.
So I remember when all four of mine were born, my husband's a physician, and the day after they were born, he was back in the operating room because he had patients and that needed operations. He had one day off. We were lucky for the birth, and that was it. And I knew that because he had to be in the operating room the next day, I did all the nights. He had to sleep because I didn't want to endanger any of his patients. And I was the one who took care of our babies. And he was a very involved dad to the extent that he could. You know, he bathed them every night and Sundays, of course, and weekends and that sort of thing. I watched my sons-in-laws, and I know this isn't the case for everybody, but they're lucky to have paternity leave from their jobs. And so I'm able to really see a generational shift in how much fathers, dads are able to be there for their babies. And I think it's wonderful because so much of feeling confident and empowered as a parent is being a parent, being there, going through the motions, going through the trials and tribulations. And so when dads are equal partners with the moms in caring for the babies, how wonderful that is for the mom, the dad, and the child. Now, there's a lot of dads out there and moms out there who are single parents, and that's fine too. And so it's about finding your team of support, whether it's with friends or paid support, if that's something that you can afford. It's the grandparents, it's siblings, it's neighbors. It doesn't matter what form that help comes in, but when there is help so that you're not parenting completely in a vacuum, completely on your own, it makes it easier for you and it allows you that time to have that breathing room so that you can then recharge, so that you can be the best parent again for your baby the next day.
As a busy mom and a very vibrant career, as you were raising your daughters, how did you find that breathing room and space? What did you love to do that kind of poured into you so that your cup was full?
Once I left television news, I was always working from home. I was able to work from home, be there for my kids when they came home from school. I was able to be there for the school plays, do the carpools, help them with homework because I had the luxury of working from home. And so that allowed me to have my time as a parent and my time as a career person and be able to do both without feeling completely torn. That's the positive of it. The negatives is that work never went away. So having four kids, having a full-time career isn't easy. And something has to give. I'm not going to be a perfect parent because I can't. There's no such thing. I'm not going to be a perfect employee or employer because I can't. But all I can do is the best that I can do with the tools that I've been given, with the confidence that I'm doing the best that I can do with and for my family and my job. And I don't know if that answers the question of my perspective, but I think that knowing that lowering our expectations for ourselves gives us that chance to breathe, gives us that chance to look at ourselves in a positive light and be able to find the wins and the celebrations and the positivity in our day-to-day when sometimes it just seems like it's just one negative and challenging thing after another.
You know, I have four boys and I have one daughter. And frankly, I'm very motivated by this topic. On behalf of my daughter, I don't want her to feel burned out and like she's not doing enough. And so my journey over the last 10 plus years of being a mom is coming to terms with the fact that I'm just a human. I'm a human with limited resources and time and good intentions. And that is more than enough. I'm not going to do this perfectly. I'm not going to martyr myself in the process. And also, you live in the reality of the real world where things aren't perfect. And for me, it motivates me to take care of myself and apologize when I'm wrong and just be the healthiest human that I can be in that embodied way for the next generation. Hopefully they don't have to feel as much of that conflict. That's my hope, at least.
For sure. And I think that these are amazing lessons that we give to our kids, having our children see us fail. There's power in no, I can't do it all right now. And that's okay. There's power in saying tonight is just going to be peanut butter and jelly. And there's amazing power in that, because when our children become adults, they will know that they also don't have to be martyrs. Because if they only saw this quote unquote perfection, then they again are going to be holding themselves to an unrealistic expectation. So then the negative cycle continues. It's okay to just let it all go. And these are all good lessons for our kids to see. The humanity in us is what we want our kids to see.
So well said. At Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. Sharon, what do you see as your superpower?
My superpower is being able to do the work for other moms and dads so that they can get the information that they need, right? So I can educate them, give them the knowledge, give them the know-how so that parents can feel empowered to make the choices that make sense for them as parents.
Love that. You do it so well. And I love how you've reinvented the entire genre through bite-sized parenting. Sharon Maisel, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly Podcast. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Sharon. And thanks to you for listening to our podcast. We will be back next week with another amazing guest. You don't want to miss it. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. The Motherly Podcast is executive produced by Jennifer Bassett. Our senior producer is Marissa Bramwell. Editing is by Joel Edinburgh. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.